Rendezvous. This short story, in two parts, is about Howard Davidson, the love of Julie's life whom she meets in the fall of 1964 during her sophomore year at La Paloma College. It is set in some future time after Howard's graduation from college and is embarking on a concert artist career. Actually, it's a fantasy written by Julie Scott in 1967, during her first year of marriage to Howard Davidson. Preparing for the concert. The keys jingled in the dim foyer, along with the sound of approaching footsteps. In a moment, the massive oak doors creaked open. Mr. Howard Davidson, with his companion, stepped out into the bright sunshine. He gazed upward for a long moment at the majestic white stone building from where he had come. He could see the tall chamber that stretched toward the sky. He still pictured the great console inside. Tired? The girl's voice struck the still air. The man nodded slightly. One more rehearsal day, Julie, and then. A wonderful concert, she added, by a marvelous artist. He smiled, his eyes still fixed on the immense structure before him. It's a fabulous organ. Together they started toward Howard's little red Volkswagen, which was almost lost in the late afternoon shadow of Carnegie Hall. It was rush hour in New York City, yet Howard Davidson hardly saw the busy streets or heard the honking about him. His mind drifted back as he remembered how this had all begun. It was in Phoenix, his own city. Even now, he sensed the breathless silence of the desert cathedral before his hands ever played a note. He felt the thrill of the keyboard as the sounds from the giant pipes filled the church and floated out into the summer night. But it hadn't stopped there. After San Francisco, there had been Dallas, and then the Chicago concert, the girl's voice filtered into his reminiscence, how does that organ compare with this one? Well, the Chicago organ had a better selection of reed stops, but this one has 10 more ranks of pipes. However, he went on, I've never seen such an acoustically responsive auditorium as. Pardon me, Mr. Davidson, Julie broke in, but we just passed the hotel. With a chuckle, he turned the car at the next intersection. He still basked in the memories of the wild ovation in Miami and the fan letters from Los Angeles and Denver. And now, his biggest chance, he would perform in New York. Success here meant success of the entire concert tour. Thank you. Julie stepped out of the car when they pulled up to the front door. I must make a few more calls, President of the AGO, New York Times editor, he commented briefly. See you later. That night in the hotel, Howard stopped by the payphone in the lobby. He unfolded the slip of paper that he drew from his pocket. Call Janie, Cherry 49761, it read. After dialing with a slow steady hand, he waited. Hello? The woman's voice seemed unsuspecting. Hello. This is Howard Davidson calling. I received a message this morning to call. Howard. She cried in sheer delight. How are you? Fine, Janie. He smiled. Never thought I would talk to you in New York City. Are you living here now? No, she replied, just vacationing. I just happened to see the announcement in the morning paper for your concert tomorrow night. They gave the name of your hotel, but I wasn't sure the message would get to you. Howard chuckled. Well, will I see you before we both leave town? You'll be at Carnegie tomorrow night? You bet I will. She assured him. And if I can fight my way through the crowds. I'll be looking for you, Janie. Howard pictured the scene. The French have a word for it, don't they? Her voice was almost mysterious. Au rendezvous. He chuckled. Tomorrow night, Janie. Goodbye, Howard, she murmured, until then. Howard slept little that night. His music lay undisturbed on the desk close beside him, but Howard tossed and turned. Every hum of the elevator outside his room seemed to Howard like the surging wind past the huge shutters of the organ. Every onrush of traffic was a sudden sforzando of the 32-foot pedal notes. Every whisper of wind brought the ethereal flutes and strings from high above Howard's whirling brain. Every moonbeam was a great staff pushing the half notes, the quarter notes, the dotted eighths and sixteenths that filled his weary body. Morning came at last. Howard was already in the parking lot when he realized Julie was not with him. Then he saw her slight frame leaning on his car. You're late, she said politely. Weren't we to leave at 9? I'm sorry. He hung his head. Then, hey, what are you doing out here? I mean, why did you come out? Julie laughed. I knew you were deep in contemplation, she said. You have been for several days. Anyway, it was such a lovely morning for a walk. So I just ended it here. He opened her door. I'm so glad you understand. With a click, he snapped open his briefcase. Check the music, will you, please? Yes, sir. Methodically, Julie lifted the stacks of music from the tan leather bag and, with secretarial efficiency, soon had everything in complete order. "Relax," she commanded gently, looking at his tensed physique. "You know it all so well." He took a deep breath as one hand fell from the steering wheel to shift gears. "Just the thought of tonight." He stared straight ahead. "Julie, do you realize what it can mean to a musician's career?" "Yes," she replied softly, "I know." The empty auditorium was almost cold that July morning as Howard's skilled hands and feet called forth the powers of the greatest masters that had ever lived, Bach, Buxtehude, Franck. Although she had heard his repertoire many times, Julie stood wide-eyed and entranced, never moving a muscle except to turn the pages as Howard had beckoned. After all, that's what she was there to do. Hour after hour passed. Bellman. Handel. Mozart. Sowerby. Hindemith. It was well past 1 o'clock that warm afternoon when Howard and Julie seated themselves in a small sidewalk cafe called the Rendezvous. The food was excellent, but Howard ate very little. At long last he spoke. "The organ concerto in E-flat," he said dreamily as Julie nodded slightly. "How would it sound with the orchestra parts on a Steinway or Yamaha Grand?" She looked at him with almost amused curiosity. "Might sound all right. Probably sound better with an orchestra." His deep blue eyes pierced through her seemingly complacent countenance. "But we could work it up in a few months' time, don't you think?" "Could be, perhaps," Julie agreed. "Then, with a twinkle, you can't afford an orchestra, Mr. Davidson?" "And you, too?" He smiled condescendingly. There was a long moment of silence. The neon sign above the cafe, visible from their table, kept flashing on and off. "Rendezvous. Rendezvous. Tonight." Howard breathed half out loud. His gaze shot far past the milling crowds. "Just thinking of the future," he mused, "and all it could mean." During the rest of the afternoon, Howard tried to relax as much as possible, but it was difficult in view of the big event that every moment brought closer and closer. He stretched out on a lounge by the pool and buried himself in the latest issues of the organ journal Julie had so thoughtfully brought. It was a lazy day, but he seemed to absorb little of the casual atmosphere that surrounded him. For a fleeting moment he thought of his pupils in California. Those ambitious young organ students, so promising but so untrained as he once had been. He even thought once of visiting the museum at Carnegie, the Music Hall of Fame. At last he dozed, his contorted body started to unwind, as the sun sank lower in the sultry sky. Presently Julie appeared with a cool glass of lemonade. "Supper will be served in half an hour," she announced. He looked blankly for a long moment into her innocent brown eyes. "Thank you," he said. After the concert, by 7:30 nearly three-quarters of the auditorium was filled. It was not the first time Howard had seen so many people. He didn't even pace back and forth in his dressing room this time. Calmly, he stood to answer the faint knock on his door. "Julie." He spoke in mild rebuke. "They're waiting for you," she said. "The music is ready, Professor." Her adoring look made him swell with well-earned pride. "You're a great page-turner," he whispered as he rushed past her onto the open stage where an explosion of applause awaited him. Julie, dressed in black satin, was barely visible behind the great organ and tuxedo-clad artist except as her functional hand reached out to turn a page. Magnificent was the music that poured forth from Howard's hands and feet and heart. Like the roar of a thunderstorm, like the ethereal depths of an exotic sea, like the quiet charm of a Gothic cathedral, Howard gave all this, and more, to the spellbound audience. The time passed quickly, and the response was tremendous. Women threw flowers, the men cheered. They all gave him a standing ovation as Howard came back for bow after bow and encore after encore. Julie, almost misty, had taken the briefcase of music and headed backstage. Howard grew tired as he signed autograph after autograph. It was a long time before the crowd of eager fans thinned out. Even the appearance of the heavyset, stern-faced custodian who stood close by the organ with folded arms seemed to have little effect on dispersing the crowd. As the tower clock in the distance was striking the hour, Howard turned to leave. It was then that he saw her. He peered through the dimly lighted hall until she was close enough to speak.
"Janie. You came."
"Yes, Howard. I said I would." With a white-gloved hand, she gave him her program to sign. "You were absolutely terrific." He smiled humbly as his trembling hand grasped the pen. Slowly, he handed it back to her as their eyes met for the first time in many years. He could see how the city light that diffused through a high rose window fell on her golden hair. "Janie," he said at last, "it's been so long." She nodded. "I always knew you'd make good, Howard. I remember how it was in school." "Ah, yes." His mind drifted back across fond memories. He chuckled. Remember how the kids always gave poor old Mr. Harris a bad time? Just because he was bald. She giggled. Then there was the time we went with the class on that picnic. And guess who got lost? Say, that was really when it all started, wasn't it? There was a silent pause. Janie glanced absent-mindedly at the now silent organ. I'll never forget that banquet and the music. Then there was the party at Larson's, the very last one when, we thought we'd never see each other again. Tell me, Howard, you graduated from that university in California, didn't you? Just a couple of years ago, he answered sheepishly. I had a rough go of it at first. But you've got what it takes, determination and talent. I always admired that, Howard. And you, Janie, you were working for Dr. Hutchins in Ludington when I saw you last. Did you finish at Michigan State? I remember the big plans we used to talk about. I did, she replied, just a few years after we said goodbye. But I'm teaching now, in Ludington. Teaching. Janie, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, Howard. You know that. From the first day we stayed after school and I listened to you play the little spinet in the Ludington cafeteria. Just then a toddler's exclamation echoed through the stillness. There she is, Daddy. And a tall, dark stranger stepped out of the shadows with a curly-headed little girl in his arms. Honey, this is Mr. Davidson, the organist, Janie said as she took the wriggling bundle into her own arms. Howard, I'd like you to meet my husband, Floyd Wright, and our little Debbie. As the two men shook hands and exchanged greetings, a door from the hallway opened and Howard spotted a familiar form. He grasped her hand. And this is the girl I could never have gotten through the concert without. Julie, I'd like you to meet the Wrights, Floyd, Janie, and Debbie, Mr. Wright smiled. Nice to meet you both. Next year, Janie inserted, you two must include Ludington in your itinerary. The man beside her nodded politely. Best wishes, Mr. Davidson and Julie. Then he turned, with his wife and child, to leave. Janie Wright, Howard whispered in awe when the darkness had enveloped them. So, that's Janie. Julie's voice was teasing. Yeah. Howard laughed with her. She still remembered who I was. Julie seemed unconcerned. Say, the AGO president talked to me, he couldn't get through to you for the people. Anyway, he already wants to know about next year. I told him you'd write when we get back to California. But what about next year, Howard? He slipped his arm around her and planted a kiss on her forehead. Together. He said deliberately. You and me, piano and organ. There's the E-flat concerto for a start. Oh, Art. She responded to his embrace. Do you really think I can, we can, do it? Darling, he squeezed her suddenly. You're a pianist, remember? But something this big. Hey, we're a team now, don't forget. He stroked her hair lightly. Besides, I love you and our music. We'll do it, sweetheart, together. She closed her eyes and laid her head against his broad shoulder. I'll never regret the day we became a team. Neither will I. He sighed softly. Come on, Mrs. Davidson, we've got a big day ahead, Carnegie Museum, lunch at the Rendezvous, and a long trip home.